Hey, folks, welcome to this episode of the Jackson Lucas Impact Real Estate Podcast. I am your host, Lisa Flicker, and today we have a very special guest, Carl Shannon, who is a senior managing director over at Tishman Speyer. Something very special about Carl is that he has spent about 26 years at Tishman Speyer. So if you want to find the person who knows where the bodies are buried, he's your person. Anyway, please listen, share, and review the podcast. It's really good for our ratings if people just give a little like or a little share. Sharing is caring. And thank you for joining us today. Have a good day. Welcome to this episode of the Jackson Lucas Impact Real Estate Podcast. I am your host, Lisa Flicker, and I have a very special guest today, Carl Shannon, all the way from the West Coast of New York, all the way from the West Coast of the United States. Carl, it's really good to have you on today. How are you?
I'm great, Lisa. Thanks for having me. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I think you have a distinction that not many people can say. You have spent almost 26 years at Tishman Speyer. So.
Yeah, it's been fun. I've had a fantastic career and started here in 1998.
Wow. So a lot of the folks that listen to this podcast are younger people kind of trying to figure out what they want to do with their career. When you graduated, were you thinking you were going to go into real estate? Were you thinking you were going to go into development? What was the plan?
Sure. So when I, you know, in college, I was absolutely convinced I was going to be an architect. And I studied architecture as an undergraduate, and I worked for an architect the summer between my junior and senior year in college in Boston. And then I worked for them part-time through my senior year. And I can remember, like it was yesterday, feeling like, gosh, I'm in the right meeting. I'm just on the wrong side of the table. And you know, was working with a local developer in Boston doing a project and realized that the developer had a lot more control over the entire process. And the people on my side of the table were, you know, had more control over the physical product, but were obsessing about details that didn't mean as much to me. And I was more fascinated with the whole process of trying to put everything together. So knowing almost nothing about real estate, went looking for a job in real estate development.
Interesting. And it's interesting because when you think even kids today who have access to the internet and technology, when you think about what you want to do, it's not so easy to kind of understand what that even means, right? So I have somebody I mentor, and he always, his whole life, he wanted to be an architect. He's a student right now. And I think up until his junior year of college, he didn't realize that the architect is not the one who does certain of the things that he really wanted to do. Was it hard for you to pivot?
Well, my dad worked for Salomon Brothers at the time, and he said to me, he said, you probably don't want to work here, but I'll set you up to talk to some of the people in Salomon's real estate department. And for those of you who are really young, Salomon Brothers was a leading investment bank in New York back in the 20th century. And so he set me up, and then I put on my one and only suit and showed up at in Lower Manhattan at Solomon's office. And I said, hi, I'm Carl Shannon, and I'm here for my interview. And the woman said, well, the person you're supposed to meet is in London this week. And I'm like, well, And I said, well, you know, my dad works upstairs and I'm interested in learning about the real estate development business. And this is just an informational interview. And she's like, oh, hold on. And she goes down the hall and she was literally like, anybody got time to talk to some kid about the real estate business? And this guy, Bill Clarity, says, sure, show him into my office. So I go in and he had worked his entire career for the Prudential Insurance Company and was a, you know, was one of the leaders in the mortgage origination group. And at the time, Solomon was trying to figure out how to do commercial mortgage-backed securities. And this guy was consulting to Solomon on how to get that done. And he spent probably the better part of an hour with me. And halfway in, he's like, you don't want to work here. Like, I was here until 6:30 last night and nobody had gone home. He said, are you willing to work in New Jersey? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So literally in the middle of my sort of impromptu informational interview with him, he calls over to New Jersey and gets the name of the woman who runs the recruiting for a program at the Prudential Insurance Company that I ended up going to work for. And it was the perfect training ground for me. They brought us in and taught us a little corporate finance, a little accounting, and a little bond math, and then sent us off into different investment units of the Prudential. And I spent most of my time working for them in their real estate development group. And it was a fantastic opportunity. But it was, you know, it's a little bit of serendipity and luck, which I think is involved in anything in your early part of your career. And as much as you want to craft it and as much as you want to organize it, some of it is just what are the opportunities that pop up in front of you.
Right. Seizing the moment. And it's interesting because I know you also teach at Berkeley now. And so you get the opportunity to kind of give back and talk to students in the way that perhaps maybe this gentleman was able to talk to you.
Yeah. And look, teaching at Berkeley means a tremendous amount to me. I teach in the Masters of Real Estate Development program. Bright, young, thoughtful people coming in, looking to shift into real estate development from other disciplines like architecture or planning or brokerage. And I really feel like it's an opportunity to share my experiences of the last, you know, 35 years in the real estate development business and share my experiences with them and hopefully make them better developers, better thinkers, better leaders, as they go off into the world. So it, you know, I find it very rewarding and it means a tremendous amount to me.
I know it does. And I love that. Do you feel like there's advice that you give often to the students? Is there anything that like a recurring theme or anything that you think of that might be good advice just to pass on publicly here?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the first piece of advice is be flexible. If you try and craft it all out, there's no way that you can anticipate all the bumps and turns and twists that a career will bring to you. And simply looking for the right opportunity in front of you is at the moment is better than trying to find the absolute perfect thing. The other piece of advice I give to people a lot is work with people you like. If you meet with people and they resonate for you and you feel simpatico with them, you're going to enjoy that job a lot more than if you go work for somebody who's a jerk, or I could use a less polite word, in something that seems like it's a more, you know, more prestigious role. You know, if you can work with great people, that's one of the resounding pieces of advice I give to students. And, you know, and the other is like when you show up at your first job and people ask you to dig ditches, you say, how
it's interesting because I think a lot of people get their career advice from TikTok now. And when I talk to students, I'm always surprised by a few things. One is people talking about, so I should have a different job every 2 years so that I can maximize my earning potential. And not only did you not do that, but obviously you've spent 26 years almost in one place. Do you, looking back, do you think you are ahead of your peers who might have jumped around?
You know, it's funny. When you do these sort of economic maximization things, you sit down and look at your career in some kind of Excel format, I think it can really drive you to make mistakes. And, you know, the opportunities at Tishman Speyer have been so far beyond what I thought they would be when I got here. The things that we've been able to build, the things we've been able to accomplish, the trust I've built with Rob and Jerry Speyer and with the entire team at Tishman Speyer, it's just been fantastic. And that is not something, you can't build that kind of track record and get those kind of things done jumping every 2 or 4 years from one place to another.
Right. And I'm sure the skills you're able to pick up by being with some projects and different developments for so many years, you see a cycle in a way that you couldn't possibly see it if you were just there for such a short period of time.
Yeah, and I think you really have to focus on, you're much better focusing on what you're learning and what the skills are that you're developing and what your opportunities are than how much I'm getting paid this week. And I think if you constantly are jumping for slightly more compensation, I just, to my core, think that's not the right way.
I agree. I often give people, even though my job is to get people to move often, I give people that advice because I think that it's a recipe for unhappiness. So if you find a place you like and people that you like to work with, I do believe that like your greatest success is going to be in a place where you kind of what you were saying, where you're working with people you like, you're building relationships, and those relationships take time to build and the trust. So what do you think, any kind of surprises in your career that were that, so you came in, you decided you wanted to be an architect, then you had the interview and you kind of got on this development path. Was there anything that sticks out as like a pivotal moment in your career where you were surprised by a choice you had to make or a decision you had to make?
Well, look, I mean, I am at my heart a developer, and development is something that is exceptionally cyclical. And, you know, I came to the Prudential Insurance Company of America in 1987 when it was certainly one of, if not the most prolific developer in the United States. You know, it was a huge organization and built major projects, Pruce Center in Boston, Pruce Center in Chicago. At the time, they controlled the development rights to all of Times Square. They built Embarcadero Center in San Francisco. Like, this was a preeminent development organization in the 60s, 70s, and into the early 80s. And I worked for them from 87 to 90. And then I went to business school between 90 and 92. And I came back to Prudential in 1992 when development was something that had happened in the history books, right? I mean, nobody was thinking about building anything anywhere in 1992. And I took on kind of a corporate job for a year, and then I ended up making mortgage loans from 93 to 95 because I wanted transactional experience. And at that time in the early 90s, not only was not anything being built, very little was being bought or sold. And making mortgage loans was a way to get transactional activity. And, you know, we've had slow moments in my career since then. at the moment, things are slow again, and I have actually made the decision to retire from Tishman Speyer. And, you know, I joke that I'm probably the only person I know who's still in their 50s who has a kid in high school who's decided to retire. But I've been lucky in terms of what I've been able to do at Tishman. I have the financial wherewithal to be able to do that. And given how slow things are in development, I really want to pour my heart into things like teaching at Berkeley and working with nonprofits in San Francisco to try and help turn San Francisco around and address challenges that I don't get to focus on in my day-to-day job.
Well, that's the big reveal. I was very excited to learn more about how was the process of making that decision for you? Because, you know, when you decide that you're going to kind of be able to do the things that you genuinely love, and I'm not saying you don't love your job, I'm sure you loved your job, but being able to kind of do the more meaningful things, it's sometimes it's hard to jump off the treadmill to do that.
It's very hard to jump off the treadmill. And, you know, when you've worked at a place for 26 years, like a big piece of who you are is tied up in what you do professionally. But Rob was incredibly supportive, incredibly understanding, and I think ultimately understood that my passion for San Francisco and the community that I live in and being able to help and support that was something that he ultimately wanted to support rather than try and talk me out of it. No, it's not easy. And there's a degree of both excitement and trepidation for me in this career transition, as I think there is for anybody who makes a large change. But it's also, I'm focusing on things I really care about and really matter in the community that I live in and that we're raising kids in. And so it feels really genuine and very true to who I am.
And I think that's the most important thing you can do for yourself, because I talk to a lot of people who fight the urge to be genuine and true to themselves for whatever reason. And, you know, what's the expression? Wherever I go, I keep popping up or something. I keep following myself. It's, you know, you follow you wherever you go. So tell me a little bit about any particular challenges, and you may or may not want to share specifics, but any times when you considered, like, maybe I don't want to be in real estate, or maybe I don't want to be a developer. Was there anything that really got you to that point in your career?
You know, I mean, from that early moment in Boston where I really realized that building projects and pulling things together was what really made me tick. I mean, I will say coming out of business school in 1992, when things were tough, I thought really hard about doing something else and going into management consulting at McKinsey with 100 of my business school classmates, and ultimately decided that was really not right for me and really wanted to stick it out in real estate, and went back to Peru in large part because that seemed like a safe, good place to be in 1992. And, you know, I was one of three people in my class of 800 in business school who chose to go into real estate. And I'm really, really glad I did that. Right. I came up in a cohort where there wasn't a lot of talent, where there weren't a lot of people who had done this. And when the market took off again in the late 1990s, I was one of the few young people who had any development experience.
That's great. And so what do you think about this cycle? Do you think we're going to be heading for some more development soon?
Look, I think that... I think office isn't dead, right? I think a year and a half ago, there were people running around saying, we're going to be a virtual company and we're going to get together at offsites and in hotel rooms and in resorts, and otherwise people are going to work from home and we don't need office space. Like, Like, nobody is saying that anymore. And people really believe that pulling people together is the way to collaborate and innovate and really drive companies. And we're seeing, you know, people embrace working in the office again, and that's coming back. Now, particularly in a city like San Francisco that is sitting at 33% vacant, I don't think that translates into breaking ground on new office buildings in the next 24 months. But I do think the office business will come back. It has been cyclical in the past, and we're going through a significant re-gearing and a significant cycle. I think the kind of office buildings we build in the future will be different. They will be more about collaboration and more about quality space and less about how many people can you cram into certain number of square feet. I do think on the residential business, housing shortages used to be a phenomenon that was limited to New York, San Francisco, maybe LA, maybe Boston. And housing shortages have now become a real issue in a lot of cities in America. And, you know, even with the recent uptick in interest rates, I do think that you are going to continue to see real demand for housing. And once the rents rise to a point where they justify the higher return on costs that's required by higher interest rates, you will see multifamily development happen again reasonably quickly in a lot of America. So, I think there will be development. This just seemed, for multiple reasons, to be an appropriate time for me to step aside.
Absolutely. But you're going to continue teaching, right?
I'm going to continue teaching. I'm going to do things in San Francisco to try and help get San Francisco on track. I'm joining the board of Spur, which is a nonprofit I care tremendously about. And I'm going to serve on the board of the urban school where my kids go to school.
That sounds phenomenal. And I think from what I hear, the city needs you. They definitely need somebody with your expertise and your passion to help. So I'm confident we're going to hear great things coming from that. So now we've come to an interesting point in the podcast where we enter the hot seat. You ready?
Sure.
The hot seat is sponsored by KK Reset. KK Reset is an HR management and outsourcing consulting firm that specializes in helping organizations to reset their culture, structure, and path. They do this through services which include comprehensive consultation to identify gaps and opportunities for corporate training programs, HR services, and career mapping services. They've collaborated with nonprofits, startups, and academic organizations to protect them from liabilities, reduce turnover, and preserve their brand. They have also collaborated with a number of my clients on the real estate front who are not large enough to have their own in-house HR program. So they outsource it to KK Reset. KK Reset comes in, maybe sits on site a couple days a week and provides, you know, everything you need from an HR perspective for your firm. So it's a great resource for those shops who just maybe it doesn't make sense for them to have in-house HR function. So please check them out at kkreset.com, kkreset.com.
That's quite the lead-in, Lisa.
I know, it doesn't warrant that kind of a lead-in. So I'm wondering if you have a book and or podcast recommendation that you would be willing to share.
Oh, I don't. Oh, gosh. It's funny. I read so much for work, which is internal material as well as lots of trade rags and whatnot, that when I have free time, often I'm not reading. Often I'm watching TV or spending time with my family or outdoors or exercising. And maybe I'm just not hip enough and enough in the younger generation, but I don't spend a lot of time with podcasts. I'm sorry. That's kind of a bummer.
That's okay. Who knows? Maybe now you'll be a regular on the podcast. So what about most memorable deal? Anything that stands out?
God, I've been blessed to work on so many things where I think we have been able to help create both great economic results, but great physical results, great sense of place. And I think that's really the challenge as a developer, is to work the architecture, politics, and planning and the construction to create a physical environment that is a great contribution, but that is also an economic success. And you know, we've done, you know, three major condominium projects in San Francisco, three major office buildings in San Francisco. But before we took on what I think is really the answer to your question, which is working on Mission Rock with the San Francisco Giants, where we really took on converting a surface parking lot into a, you know, new mixed-use neighborhood with office and apartments and retail together, creating a whole new neighborhood in San Francisco. And we've done that in the heart of the pandemic. We're putting the finishing touches on delivering the four buildings that make up the first phase. And I'm really incredibly proud of the physical environment that we've created with the Giants and the public-private partnership with the Port of San Francisco to really make this new neighborhood.
Talk about being able to leave a legacy when you have such a large project like that and you have your name stamped on it. It's pretty exciting.
Well, my name stamped on it along with lots of other people, right? I mean, it takes a small village to make these things happen. And it's a complex partnership, and I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I didn't feel like there weren't outstanding resources, both at the Giants and at Tishman Speyer, to carry this forward.
I'm sure. Well, part of that, I'm sure, is your mentoring of those folks. But I'm curious to know, were there any folks that mentored you that you think gave you valuable advice throughout your career to help you to get to where you are?
Well, the one guy at Salomon Brothers we talked about a while ago set my career in the right place. You know, some of the people I work with at Prudential early in my career were great with me. Terry McHugh, John Dark, Skip McKenzie, people who really taught me good values about thinking about real estate. And also, the values at Pru were great in terms of how they treated people. And so I have immense respect for them. Early in my career in San Francisco, I worked for a guy named Mark Couchman, who was a fantastic leader. And each of those people, you know, shape and drive who you become. And I'd be remiss not to include in that list both Jerry and Rob Speyer, who've done a fantastic job of building and growing Tishman Speyer into a real world-class organization.
Oh, yeah. They definitely get kudos for that. They have definitely grown that business, and it is very well-respected. And the training that people get there, you can't compare it. When you are out hiring, is there anything that you particularly look for in a candidate? Are there the best athlete type of thought process, somebody who feels like they could solve a problem, or are you looking for somebody with certain skill sets? What do you think makes a good candidate?
And part of it is just cultural fit and personality. And you know, the one thing that will really trip you up in an interview with me is coming across as being a jerk. You know, I really want people who will work collaboratively. Part of it is I've become a big believer that it isn't as much about finding the right individual person as it is putting together the complete team. And that we are stronger as a team if there is diversity of thought in our team. And that comes from gender diversity and racial diversity, and, you know, but also diversity in experience. And, you know, if you take a team that is made up of 5 Harvard MBAs and you trade one of those MBAs out for somebody with a different skill set, that team is going to be significantly stronger through that trade. And if you then trade a second person out for a unique third skill set, you're going to make the team even stronger from there. So, you know, it's about finding people that you think are bright, thoughtful, willing to speak their opinions, and work well with your team and respect people who are like them and people who are not like them.
I could see that. And I feel like I always think of hiring as a puzzle, right? You have the pieces have to fit together and they can't all be the same. So I love that. And I really appreciate you coming on and spending this time with me today. I think that you've had some pretty phenomenal things to share, some pretty phenomenal things to talk about that you've done throughout your career. And I am very excited to see what you do next.
I'm excited too. Thank you so much for having me on. Thank you for your help in working with us on our New York team. We're really thrilled to work with you. And it's always a pleasure to come on and talk about, you know, the way your career has progressed and whatnot. And hopefully for the young people out there, some of what I've shared resonates and is helpful to you.
Tell me 1 minute about the program at Berkeley in case anybody's interested in it.
Sure. It's a 1 year's Masters of Real Estate Development and Design, MRAD plus D program. It's in the College of Environmental Design. It starts in May and runs a full calendar year. So it's a 1 year graduate program, and they're looking for people basically with 3 to 10 years of work experience who've had some exposure to real estate development, but haven't necessarily worked in real estate development. So they're architects, they're planners, they're brokers, they're engineers who have some understanding for real estate, some appreciation for real estate, but really want to come and hone their skills. And they do this 1 year program where I teach real estate applications of real estate finance in the fall and real estate capital markets in the spring. And I'm going to help with one of the introductory courses this summer. And then the hope is that they can do that program and find jobs out in commercial real estate. And I think it's a great program. It's a relatively new program at Berkeley. I'm teaching what I think is now the 7th cohort that's come through. In each year, both the program and the students continue to get better.
It sounds like an incredible program. Well, for anybody out there listening who wants to meet Carl live, sign up and you could spend some time with him. Thank you, Carl. Have a really great weekend.
Thanks, Lisa.